In today's Mishnah, we're in the 8th and 9th Mishnah, the 7th Perek Masechta Ediot. And this Mishnah discusses the Mosaf HaYora. A Yora is like a large, very large pot, or almost like an urn, usually made of metal. And the Mosaf is the extension they make at the top, made of tit. Yes, I translated cement, but it's more like a clay or plaster that would go around the top of it. So the question is that considered part of the Kli or not? So anything that's used in conjunction with the Kli, so in this case the vat, is considered part of the Kli. What Menachem ben Signai says, well, it depends which type of Yorah we're talking about. So Mishnah begins, Ha'id Menachem ben Signai al Mosaf Yorah, he says, if it's Shol Kei Zeitin, the people used to boil up olives, he says, then it's Tameh. Why? Because the Mosaf HaYorah was really to stop the water spilling over the top, and therefore that extension is considered part of the Kli itself. Therefore, it's also susceptible to Tumah. The Shatzabaim, this refers to dyers, like a dyer's vat. In that situation, the Mosaf, the extension, is considered Tahor. Why? That is because the dyers would be very, very careful that the water level wouldn't reach the extension. And because it's made of this clay and plaster, the concern was that if the water would reach that level, it would start mixing in with the tit itself and then ruin the product they're trying to boil up. So that's why he differentiates between the purpose of the vat. And why is this testimony important? That is because you omrim chiluf tvarim, because initially they said the complete opposite. In other words, initially they thought that when do we consider the Mosaf HaYorah considered part of the Yorah itself? That is when the product inside the pot is more precious and the person doesn't want it to spill out. So that's why they thought initially when they're boiling up olives, then they don't really care about the water splashing out. So the Mosaf is not considered part of the Kli, but with dye, the liquid itself is very important, and therefore the Mosaf is part of the Kli. But as I've explained, Rabbi Menachem ben Signai testified to the opposite, that it's really the case of how the person uses a Kli, whether they're comfortable with the water reaching the top, or in the case of Tzabim, they would not be. Let's now learn Mishnah Tet. Here Rabbi Nechunya ben Gudgada. The Rabbi Nechunya ben Gudgada testified about a number of halachas which we'll learn about in this Mishnah. First is al chareshet tziaviha shihi yotza beget. We saw this case back in Pesach Gittin. So a chareshet is a deaf mute. So referring to a girl while she's still a ketana, a deaf mute. And we mentioned back in Pesach Gittin that a father has the capacity to marry for his daughter who's a ketana midin Torah. So despite the fact this chareshet is not considered a bat das that she could normally get married, since the father can mekabel kiddushah, can marry her off and accept the kesef kiddushin, the money used for this betrothal, then she's considered married on a biblical level. Now, the problem is, if she's married on a biblical level, the question is, can she actually get divorced? She's not a bat das. She's not considered of someone of having a understanding to her, of a halachic significance. So Rabbi Nechunya ben Gudgada says, yes, she can. She can actually get divorced. Why? Because since a woman is mitgareshet baal korcha, she can be divorced forcibly, therefore there's no requirement of a das, and therefore this chareshet can be divorced. Next case, Val Ketana Bat Yisrael Shiniset Lekohen. He's referring to a Ketana, so a young girl below Bat Mitzvah that's married off, but she's a Ketana Yotoma, so her father's not around anymore, and she was married off either by her mother or brother, and the marriage is only on a rabbinic level. So she was a Bat Yisrael, and Bat Yisrael cannot eat Truma. She's been married off to a Kohen, and normally, if she's married on a biblical level, she'll be able to now eat Truma by virtue of being married to a Kohen. Mishnah says that we allow this Ketana, despite the fact that she's not married on a biblical level, to eat sheolchela b'truma, she can eat truma that's defined truma only on a rabbinic level. And we don't make a gzeira prohibiting her for eating that truma out of concern she might actually start eating truma that's defined as truma on a biblical level, which she's not allowed to eat. In the next, if you like, case, or part of this case, if she passed away. So again, the marriage is only really rabbinic. Nonetheless, Baal Yorsha, the mitakan chachamim, the husband would be able to inherit her property. Despite the fact on a biblical level he had no right to, but since we have formed this marriage on a rabbinic level anyway, the chachamim have the capacity to, if you like, change the ownership of particular property and may give him the capacity to inherit it. And that's based on the principle of hefger beitin hefger, which is important for the next few cases. The next one is as follows, Val Marish HaGazel Shebena O Babira Sheyitena Danav. So normally, if someone steals something from somebody else, they have to return that object once they're caught, or once they admit to the fact they stole it. If, however, it's completely been, say, changed or modified, so if it was a piece of wood and it's been cut up and changed, then all they have to do is return the value of that, say, for example, piece of wood or beam that they stole. Here we're dealing with a person who stole, a crossbeam and built it into the house. Now, technically, the beam hasn't really changed anything in its structure, that one would think they'd have to actually take apart the house and return the beam that was stolen. So his next edut is that the Merisha Gazu Shabana the Bir those building the house, that you can yiten et damav, simply return the money. Now why is that? That is what's called because Mipnei Takanat Hashavim. We learned this all in Gittin as well. Takanat Hashavim means is that if we required this person to dismantle his house and return the beam, then let's say he wasn't caught, but he really wants to do tshuva. Then the fact that he had to dismantle his house to return the beam would be almost like a deterrent for him to do tshuva. Therefore, the Chachamim said that in that such a situation, he can just return the money. And therefore, it would remove the barrier for someone who wanted to do tshuva and return what was stolen. In this case, at least the value of what was stolen. And the final case is Alachatata Gzula. He refers to a person who stole an animal and wanted to offer it as a korban chatat. In such a situation, the next takana was, but if it was shalon odal rabim, that no one knew that this was a stolen animal, other than obviously the thief himself, shimechaperit would still atone for the person who brought the korban. And he wouldn't have to bring another korban chatat if it was later discovered it was initially stolen. Why are we making such an allowance for someone who's actually a thief? That's, in this case, the mipnei tikkun hamizbeach. And that is for the benefit of the operations in the Beis HaMikdash. How so? Because if the law was as it's meant to be mikardin, meaning if someone stole an animal, it's not theirs, and they tried to offer it as a korban, and it wouldn't work, it would be equivalent to simply bringing any animal and simply slaughtering the azara. Now, korban chatat, if it's offered properly, the parts of the korban are given to the kohen to eat. If the law was as it's meant to be, then they might question everyone who's coming to the Beis HaMikdash. They might think, oh, I don't know, maybe stolen it. Well, then I don't want to eat from this korban because this korban really isn't a korban and I'm eating chulin shenich shatu ba'azara, really just a regular animal that's slaughtered in the azara, and therefore I'm not allowed to partake in this korban. Again, it would be almost like give the kohen pause and they'd hesitate with offering this korban chatat that brought to Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, we implemented this takana that any korban chatat, if it's offered, even if it happened to be stolen, as long as no one knew about it, then it would mechaper, it would actually work. And that way, the kohanim, when they're asked to offer a korban chatat, would not hesitate, because they know for sure, even if it was a stolen korban, it would act the animal, then it would korban would still work. And then the operations of Beis HaMikdash continue smoothly. Those are the Mishnah today.